Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, October 13th, 2016. In an exclusive interview with this program, Rick Machar says the 2015 peace agreement is dead.
The new government is not a transitional government of national unity. They should not delude the international community of this. The current government is a new regime, but it is not implementing the agreement.
That interview is ahead on South Sudan in Focus. And Amnesty International calls on the African Union Commission to form a hybrid court for South Sudan.
Certainly establishing a body like the hybrid court, you know, is not a simple task. There are many considerations that have to be made. There are many elements to the court and many determinations to be made about how it should be structured.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But first, Amnesty International and the International Federation for Human Rights, or FIDH, are calling on the African Union Commission to expedite the establishment of the hybrid judicial court in South Sudan. One expert tells me further delay could imperil the judicial process and slow delivering justice for victims of the nearly three-year-long conflict. Both rights groups say the justice system in South Sudan is not capable of trying people who have been accused of committing crimes against international law since the 2013 violence began. Research by FIDH says there are deficiencies in the South Sudanese justice system, saying it's underfunded, understaffed, and vulnerable to political interference. Elizabeth Deng, Amnesty International South Sudan researcher in Nairobi, says the hurdles of establishing the court should only encourage the African Union Commission to take the lead, as stipulated in the August 2015 peace deal.
Certainly establishing a body like the hybrid court, you know, is not a simple task. There are many considerations that have to be made, you know, including we included in our recommendations a call for a victim and witness protection unit. There has to be an investigative branch. There has to be a defense office. At least that's what we're recommending. So there are many elements to the court and many determinations to be made about how it should be structured and what its framework should be.
Deng says, in principle, the trial should take place as close as possible to the location where the crimes were committed to ensure that trials are accessible for victims and community members. But in some cases, the African Union should consider setting up courts in the overall region, which could also help deliver justice.
There are potential security risks to staff, witnesses, accused persons, and victims that may not allow the trials to take place within South Sudan, at least initially. We are saying that, yes, the location should be within the region so that it is at least, you know, reasonably accessible to South Sudanese, and that the statute of the court should allow for some flexibility for the court to reassess the security situation within South Sudan and to conduct site visits, hear witness testimony, or hold proceedings in South Sudan if and when that is feasible.
It's been more than a year since the peace deal paved the way for a hybrid court. Deng says the African Union Commission can do several things to expedite the process for establishing the court.
Specifically by ensuring that consultations are taking place, including with civil society, as they determine the statute and the rules of procedure of the court. And we believe that the investigative branch of the court needs to be prioritized. And we see this as especially urgent given the ongoing human rights violations that are taking place. Effective evidence collection and preservation is really critical to allowing for successful prosecution. And so we're calling for the African Union to prioritize establishing the investigative branch of the court.
Deng says it is critical, that the hybrid court provide an independent witness and victim protection unit, given the potential risk of retaliation against people who contribute evidence to the court. Deng says the witness and victim protection unit should be robust so that it can give witnesses the confidence to bring to the court important evidence. South Sudan's government spokesperson says his country will not accept a hybrid court to try suspects accused of committing human rights abuses during the conflict. Michael McQuay says the government already has what he calls a credible judicial system to try any suspects accused of committing crimes. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
The hybrid court is an international criminal court which is part of the August 2015 peace agreement signed by President Kiir and former first vice president Riek Machar. The African Union was supposed to set up the hybrid court months ago to try all alleged war crime suspects, but it has yet to be established. Government spokesperson Michael McQuay says the courts of South Sudan are competent to try individuals who committed murder, looted property, and raped women and girls during the fighting which began in December 2013. Despite the Kiir administration's agreement to create a hybrid court, McQuay says South Sudanese are capable of solving their own problems through the country's courts.
There is no question of us going to ICC or to the hybrid court. This is, when you talk of such things, it means that you don't recognize your own system.
He says a hybrid court should only be established under laws enacted by the National Legislative Assembly and argues that hybrid courts may not be allowed to operate in South Sudan if the terms and conditions of the courts do not match the laws of South Sudan.
It is an ad hoc court established specifically for South Sudan only, and once it disposes of whatever cases to do with this rebellion, definitely it goes.
International humanitarian aid agencies say the July fighting in Juba left at least 300 people dead and forced tens of thousands of others to flee their homes. The United Nations reported that hundreds of crimes were committed against civilians, including the rape of teenage girls by men in military uniform in Juba. South Sudan is not a party to the International Criminal Court or ICC. Legal experts say the ICC has no jurisdiction over crimes committed during the ongoing conflict in South Sudan. McQuay insists that crimes committed in South Sudan cannot be investigated by international bodies.
There is nothing called global justice. These are terminologies which are created for whatever is global. Everything, any law, applies in accordance with its area of jurisdiction. Because in some countries, homosexuality is not a crime. To us here in South Sudan, it is a crime. Gay marriages is not a crime, but to us here in South Sudan, it is a crime.
Human Rights Watch, South Sudan Law Society, and other rights groups have repeatedly stated that South Sudan's justice system is compromised and not capable of trying suspects of crimes committed in the country since December 2013. South Sudan's Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila Onango told reporters in August that his ministry lacks the capacity to try soldiers suspected of committing rape and other crimes during violence in Juba and elsewhere across the country. Onango says his ministry wants to investigate all crimes committed during the conflict in the country, but his ministry does not have the resources or the competent judges needed to handle cases related to the ongoing violence in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
The Union of Journalists in South Sudan, or UJOS, is condemning the harassment of journalists across the country. Earlier this week, Malek Bol, a reporter for Juba's El Makif Arabic newspaper, was kidnapped, beaten, and dumped at a cemetery outside of Juba town. UJOS described the incident as unfortunate and a tragedy for the country's media. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba that the editor-in-chief of El Makif says journalists need protection.
27-year-old Malek Bol was kidnapped on Friday by unknown armed men and found on Monday in a graveyard in Gumbo. Bol was beaten and suffered a broken rib. UJOS chairperson Oliver Modi says journalists in South Sudan work in a harsh environment.
It is really so unfortunate for us in this country, South Sudan, that journalists become targets And it has become now beyond our control that we reached a point of even losing journalists, dead. Their lives have gone, our beloved ones. Some young journalists who might have actually served this country for a number of years and take us to where we are.
Bol Deng Mayan says Bol, who is a family member, was missing for 3 days and nights. He says Bol is now recovering from his injuries at a hospital in Juba. Injuries incurred from men Deng believes to be government operatives. Speaking in Arabic, Deng says Bol narrowly survived.
We found him in a critical situation, and you could see signs of torture on his body, and we took him to the hospital, and we did all the procedures accordingly. And according to the medical checkups, it shows that one of his ribs was found broken, but he is doing well.
According to testimony from Bol, his kidnappers asked him why he criticized President Kiir on the issue of corruption in the country. Matiang Shirilo, the editor-in-chief of Al Mawqif Arabic newspaper, says Bol was employed at the newspaper in May and had been contributing articles on topical issues in South Sudan. He says Bol recently wrote an article criticizing President Kiir and praising the Central Report on Corruption in South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Shirilo says he believes Bol's Facebook postings must have annoyed government supporters.
I think the main reason behind his kidnapping is that he wrote an opinion on his Facebook criticizing President Kiir and defending the Central Report. In his opinion, he was saying President Kiir is responsible of the ethnic violence in South Sudan, and he has failed to provide solutions for this violence. And he also accused the president of standing with few citizens against the majority.
The recent Central Report says President Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar have been involved in corruption for years. The report says both men own luxury houses in Kenya. Shirilo says South Sudanese journalists are determined to work in the country despite its harsh working environment.
We will continue providing our services, but we expect that instead of using this kind of politics, they should use legal way and follow the law. But what they are doing is inhuman way of doing things.
Modi says the media has contributed to an independent South Sudan.
If there are individuals who think that media is not important in this country, this is a tragedy. Something that we need to respond to it and make sure that these people should be brought to their sense that media today is a cornerstone of any system of government, of any democratic practices. Any nation that denies media will live in a closed society. We need to be heard outside, and we need to hear from outside.
Malek Bol is the third journalist this year who has been tortured, beaten, and thrown into a graveyard. Joseph Afendi, who works for Al Tabir Arabic newspaper, and Chan Joseph of the Al Mawqif Arabic newspaper were also kidnapped, beaten, and dumped along the roadside this year by men whose identities remain unknown. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up next, our exclusive interview with Riek Machar. That's coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the greatest lesson you have learned from a relationship or marriage?
The greatest lesson I've learned is to accept others based on who they are and not based on what you want them to be.
Human beings are not perfect. They can hurt you sometimes, but then you also need to forgive.
I've learned not to give too much and not to trust at all. Because I gave too much, I gave myself fully, and I never reaped anything out of it.
It's that of trust. It's that of trust, because without trust, there is no way you can thrive on with a relationship.
In marriage, I have learned one thing: to be patient. I cannot trust a woman 100%, you know. That is relationship. And I think I cannot cheat on my woman because she is my woman. So that is my experience.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus. In an exclusive interview with South Sudan in Focus, former First Vice President Riek Machar, who has not been heard from in 3 months, describes what he has been going through since fleeing Juba in July.
If I had a plan to fight in Juba, I would have waited until the number 2,910 was already in Juba. But I didn't wait for that because I wanted the implementation of the agreement to be done fast. So when we were pushed out, I withdrew the troops. We moved South Baria, then we moved to Lanya area, then from there to the areas of Mundri, from Mundri to Maridi, and then moved southward to the Congo. That took exactly 37 days. If you add the 3 days of the fighting, we were under fire for over 40 days.
And who was fighting you? Who was fighting you as you were moving from Mundri, Maridi, and then to Congo? Who was fighting you?
The SCLA, because basically, when I withdrew, I was in communication with President Salva. I told him that there is a need for both of us to meet. But then when they pushed us out from Juba, I realized that it was just impossible for both of us to meet. So I decided to withdraw to a country which I would be secure in and then find a way of having that meeting with President Salva. They had ground forces pursuing us. They had the helicopter gunships, MI-24. They had four of them. And they also had one drone and two surveillance planes that were daily on our head, locating where we were marching, and then the helicopter gunships would follow and bombard us, and then the troops that are following us would attack us. All that period, I was being attacked, despite that I was also the first vice president of the republic. I didn't see the reason why I would be attacked.
When you left Juba, President Kiir told a Kenyan journalist that during the fighting at the J1, that's the presidential palace, that you had pistol on you and you wanted to kill him.
Oh my God, this is a big lie. I, Riek Machar, do not carry pistol or pistols or guns since 1991 when I began to lead either a party or troops. I don't carry pistols. He knows that very well. Why would I carry a pistol? And when he has called me for a meeting in J1, it's not my habit to carry a pistol. It didn't happen in that day. And for over 25 years, it has not been happening. Everybody knows that.
Dr. Machar, what is the next move now? I remember when you met with the senior leadership of your party in Khartoum, you issued a statement saying you are calling for resistance. What does that mean?
The new government is not a transitional government of national unity. They should not delude the international community of this. The current government is a new regime, but it is not implementing the agreement. The reason why the attempt on my life in J1 was a rejection of the agreement. Because what were we discussing? We were discussing the issues that were pending, the five countries that are representing the five regions in Africa, and also the Troika and the UN. Since some of them are grantors, some of them are witnesses, they have to find a way of resuscitating this agreement. Once it is resuscitated, people accept that there has been violations, and then the need for reinstituting the transitional government becomes the first step. Done. On the 11th morning before I left Khartoum the next day, which was on the 12th yesterday, President Museveni was in Khartoum. He requested me to meet him. And in that meeting, which was also attended by Dr. Lam, in that meeting, he was looking for a political solution. And I told him, our resolutions were saying we need a political solution. By the way, there is no political initiative to engage the warring parties. What we see is as if no incident happened on J1 and no incidents happened consequently, and as if there is no fighting in South Sudan.
In part two of our exclusive interview with Riek Machar, he will discuss the future of the SPLM in opposition, including members like Taban Dengai who have joined the government in Juba. Tune in tomorrow to hear the second part of that interview. Some former SPLM political detainees say South Sudan may slide back into chaos following stepped-up fighting and the targeted killings of individuals across the country. The group says the ongoing instability across the country may lead to an even more violent conflict. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
The former political detainees, also known as G10 Plus, say over the past 2 weeks, disturbing developments have occurred in several parts of the country. The group outlined the killing of civilians in some towns and villages on roads, especially on the Juba-Nimule, Juba-Torit, and Juba-Yei highways. It also says some of the killings and arbitrary arrest targeted ethnic affiliations, a move former detainee Kosti Manibe says could destabilize the country.
We are concerned that if you look at the trend of things, it is leading in a direction that eventually may lead into genocide and definitely the total disintegration of the country that we call South Sudan. The country is on the verge of collapse and disintegration into chaos.
Manibe blames the government for failing to address the targeted killings and atrocities committed by members of the South Sudan Army in the former Central Equatoria state.
If the government were doing enough, of course, those issues, those problems would not be there. Definitely, the government, it is not doing enough to address. Once the problems have arisen, it is not doing enough to address it. That is why they persist.
The former detainees say practical measures are needed to address the challenges and are calling for the prompt deployment of the United Nations-backed Regional Protection Force to protect civilians. Manibe says the country needs urgent help.
In our view, the peace agreement is severely fractured. It is very ill. It is on the point of dying. There is a chance it can be resuscitated. Somebody in coma can be resuscitated, provided you take certain measures to do it. One is to look at where it has been fundamentally fractured so that you fix the damage. And then it can now be revived and move ahead.
In response to the concerns voiced by the group, South Sudan Deputy Minister of Information, Paul Akol-Kordit, reminded the former detainees that they are signatories of the August 2015 peace deal.
We've signed an agreement, and they are part of this agreement. They are participating in the Coalition Government of National Unity. Why can they not express and initiate what they think should be done in the Chigono, in the Council of Ministers? They have two ministers, Minister of Transport, they have Minister of Foreign Affairs.
Kordit acknowledges that the government is facing serious security challenges in parts of the country.
There are SPLA-IO that we are now working to control, go to the containment areas. But there are also affiliated militia and some groups that do not even belong to the side, but they are there with their weapons in their hands. And they are causing this mayhem, of course. They are causing insecurity, we don't deny this. But this is the challenge that we have to address.
The former political detainees, also known as leaders of the SPLM, were detained in December 2013 by President Salva Kiir after Mr. Kiir accused them of attempting a coup plot in December 2013. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
And here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. In an exclusive interview with this show today, Riek Machar says the current South Sudan government is illegitimate and that he was forced out of Juba in July. The former first vice president, speaking from South Africa, refused to recall his appeal for his countrymen to carry out an armed resistance against the government of South Sudan. The Union of Journalists in South Sudan is condemning the harassment of journalists across the country. Earlier this week, Malik Bol, a reporter for Juba's El Mokif Arabic newspaper, was kidnapped, beaten, and dumped at a cemetery just outside of Juba town. The union described the incident as unfortunate and a tragedy for the country's media. The editor-in-chief says journalists need protection. 27-year-old Malik Bol was kidnapped on Friday by unknown gunmen and found on Monday in a graveyard in Gumbo. He was beaten and suffered a broken rib. The union's chairperson, Oliver Modi, says journalists in South Sudan work in a harsh environment. Bol Dang Mayen says Bol, who is a family member, was missing for 3 days and nights. He says Bol is now recovering from his injuries at a hospital in Juba, injuries incurred from men Dang believes to be government operatives. According to testimony from Bol, the kidnappers asked him why he criticized President Kiir on the issue of corruption in the country. Matang Cirillo, the editor-in-chief of the El Mokif Arabic newspaper, says Bol was employed at the newspaper in May and had been contributing articles on Sudan, South Sudan. He says Bol recently wrote one criticizing President Kiir and praising the Century Report on corruption in South Sudan. And finally, Amnesty International and the International Federation for Human Rights are calling on the African Union Commission to expedite the establishment of the hybrid judicial court in South Sudan. One expert says further delay could imperil the judicial process and slow delivery of the justice system for victims of the nearly three-year-long conflict. Both rights groups say the justice system in South Sudan is not capable of trying people accused of committing crimes against international law since 2013. Research by the group FIDA says there are deficiencies in the South Sudanese justice system. They say it's underfunded, understaffed, and vulnerable to political interference. Elizabeth Deng, Amnesty International South Sudan researcher in Nairobi, says the hurdles of establishing the court should only encourage the African Union Commission to take the lead, as stipulated in the August 2015 peace deal. Deng says, in principle, the trial should take place as close as possible to the location where the crimes had been committed to ensure that trials are accessible for victims and community members. But in some cases, the African Union should consider setting up courts in the overall region, which could also help deliver justice. The government, meanwhile, says its own justice system can take care of the criminal cases facing the country. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Ceasefire by Kabas featuring Young Bo. Hey.
Yeah. South Sudan ceasefire. Kabas, AKJK, Blue. Young Bo, Tanya Loco, Elidea. Emma Swickers. We need some peace, y'all. Harmony is what you're dying for. Yep.
Zeta Duban, Junu Sudan, Bele Jamil wa Aziz, Lakisi Yasa Shilu Nasfa, Ukate Zaman, Nina Kulana Kan Machin, Leki Dam, Shufsha Bab Bimud, Yal Bimud, Bejian, Metalga, Mofof Kaman, Kuli Yama Halbika, Mama Bikore,
Yarabi,
we want peace.
Listening to Kabas featuring Young Bo with the song Ceasefire. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thank you for allowing us into your home or vehicle. We invite you to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Kukatia, Samantha Wilma Del.